our country today, Democrats voted to break down barriers so we can all rise together.
They said it was a movement. This is really a movement, folks. This is a movement. And you know what? It's not about me. I'm a messenger. It's really about you. We're going to take our country back and make it great again.
Scott Kelly back on Mother Earth after 340 days in space.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. It is 5:10 and it is Wednesday, March the 2nd, 2016. Welcome to another day and welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Lots to talk to you about today. It's a little bit slippery on the sidewalks this morning. The roads are okay. Boy, it was nice to hear the opening pitchers being announced for baseball season. We all keep our fingers crossed that the warmth is just around the corner. I can't wait to not have to slip on the ice walking my dog at 3 o'clock in the morning. That'll be nice. It's been a pretty nice night overnight on the markets again for a change. Both Europe and Asia have numbers that are in the green this morning for the most part, and the Dow futures, unfortunately, are just a little lower this morning, but they're going to be buoyed probably a little later this morning by some economic news, more economic news. Let's get right to the global market intel this morning. And first up, we'll tell you that the Dow yesterday finished 348 points higher. That's a gain of about 2.1%. So we can't fault it for being a little lower this morning. Asian stocks, as I mentioned, generally higher. They were higher yesterday as well. The U.S. economy is showing signs of strength. And that could, again, impact the markets today as we move forward. Standard & Poor's gained 46 yesterday, or about 2.4%. Tech stocks also did well yesterday. They gained about 2.9% on the NASDAQ. Federal Reserve today is going to offer the latest snapshot of the economy. It's going to release the Beige Book early this afternoon. In mid-January, the Fed found the economy had expanded across much of the U.S. for the 6 weeks prior. Today's report will be used for discussion when the central bank meets later this month, of course, on everybody's minds, whether or not they're going to raise interest rates again. Also yesterday, front and center before Congress, members of Apple's team, legal team, and the director of the FBI testified on the Apple encryption controversy. Apple General Counsel Bruce Sewell says Apple has no sympathy for terrorists and the utmost respect for law enforcement and their work. But he says in seeking access to a phone used by one of the San Bernardino attackers,
building that software tool would not affect just one iPhone. It would weaken the security for all of them. In fact, just last week, Director Comey agreed, and I think we heard the same here today, that the FBI would likely use this as precedent for other cases involving other phones. The FBI is asking Apple to weaken the security of our products. Hackers and cyber criminals could use this to wreak havoc on our privacy and personal safety. It would set a dangerous precedent for government intrusion into the privacy and safety of its citizens.
Before the House Judiciary Committee, FBI Director James Comey responded,
thank you for hosting this conversation and for helping us all talk about an issue that I believe is the hardest issue I've confronted in government, which is how to balance the privacy we so treasure that comes to us through the technology that we love, and also achieve public safety, which we also all very much treasure. The companies are not evil. The government's not evil. You have a whole lot of good people who see the world through different lenses, who care about things, all care about the same things, in my view.
FBI Director James Comey conceding at one point that law enforcement made mistakes early on in the investigation that could have prevented this controversy and this debate right now. And he also admitted that there were dozens of other phones and other cases that the FBI wants to break into using this software. Also, big news yesterday from Heinz. We learned that the company is going cage-free with its eggs. Joining us on the Opening Bell live this morning is Wayne Pacelle, of the CEO. He's the CEO of the Humane Society, and he's been instrumental in this. Heinz, as you know, Kraft Heinz, has headquarters in Chicago and Pittsburgh. Wayne, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning to you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being with us today. Well, this is another company. We've heard Mondelez International is going cage-free. McDonald's is going to go cage-free. And now Heinz, this is Kraft. It's a big one. How were you instrumental, and why is this important?
Well, in the last 6 months, there's been quite a revolution in food. You know, eggs are really ubiquitous for all of us. The average American eats 264 eggs a year. many of these eggs are hidden in muffins and breads and pastas, so you don't even realize the volume. But there are 300 million laying hens, 90% of which have been kept in small cages called battery cages, where the average hen has less than a sheet of paper in terms of the living space, 67 square inches per bird. And we've been talking to these companies. So we've been talking to Kraft Heinz. We talked to McDonald's, which really made the pivotal announcement in September of 2015. Since then, it's just been a cascade of companies. And so many of these companies have a commitment to social responsibility. They've got that in the C-suite. And essentially, you know, we've talked to them and said, hey, it's inhumane to keep these animals this way. It's not good for food safety. And prices can be equivalent for giving animals an environment, a cage-free environment to live in. You should do it. And so many of these companies, including Kraft Heinz, which we applaud today, are doing it. And it's a small change in our lives. It's an enormous change in the life of animals.
We're going to continue this conversation, and coming up in the next segment, we'll talk about when this is going to happen and how big of a change it is for the animals, and also some more of the Humane Society's work in this area. That's after we check traffic here on the opening bell. And good morning to Adam Chappelle.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, U.S. construction spending increased in January by the largest amount in 8 months, helping to boost investor optimism yesterday. The Dow closed up 348 points to 16,865. The S&P 500 index picked up 46 points. The NASDAQ advanced 131. Yesterday's strong showing by U.S. investors sent overseas stocks higher overnight. The French, German, and English markets all were posting gains after Wall Street's bulls had their best showing in more than a month. Anheuser-Busch has agreed to sell its stake in China's Snow Breweries for $1.6 billion to ease regulatory concerns about the merger of the world's two biggest beer makers. Critics said the corporate marriage gave Anheuser-Busch a stranglehold on the lucrative Chinese beer market. And a pioneer in digital distribution has died. Jim Kimsey came back from Vietnam to open a D.C. area restaurant and then a video game download company called Control Video. That company became America Online. AOL founder Jim Kimsey, dead of cancer at 76. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 521. Welcome back to the program. We're talking with Wayne Pacell, the CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, on Twitter, at Wayne Pacell, P-A-C-E-L-L-E. Wayne, before the break, you were talking about how, Kraft Heinz is the latest to go cage-free. And on your blog, you write, this is the new normal. Are we going to see, what do you mean by that, I guess is the better question.
Well, you know, we grew up as an agrarian country. You know, if you wanted to see how the animals were raised for food, you stepped out of your log cabin and looked, and because they were all around us. Now 1% of us are farmers, and the food that we consume is raised far off from us. And in the last 50 years, there was this incredible forced migration of animals from pastures and fields where they could feel sunlight on their backs or soil on their feet. We put them in these huge, dank warehouses. And sometimes within those warehouses, we jammed them into cages, and the animals couldn't even turn around. I mean, you look at some of these industrial pig farms and these egg farms, you know, where the hens are living, and the animals can't even move. I mean, I've been to them. It's appalling. And we've been pushing at the Humane Society of the United States to at least give the animals an opportunity to move around, to turn around, to get them out of cages. And we broke through on the pig issue in 2012 after McDonald's said they're not going to confine the sows, the breeding sows, in crates. And now, with the laying hens, it's been the last 6 months, more than 70 of the biggest names in food retail. Yesterday, in addition to Kraft Heinz, we also announced Albertsons, which has brands like Safeway, so many companies, Burger King and Cracker Barrel. All of these companies are saying now we're going to start purchasing over time our eggs from farmers who do not confine the hens in cages. And again, it may seem like a small matter to a lot of people, but it's a product that touches just about every one of us. And doesn't each one of us want to know that the food we're consuming did not come from an animal who was tormented to get that food to us?
Let me play devil's advocate for just a moment, because when you say cage-free, when we mention this term cage-free, I think people think that these hens are going to be running around on the countryside and having huge areas. There isn't really a lot more room that they're going to have in most cases, is there?
Well, cage-free is not synonymous with pasture-raised outside, basically. Cage-free can mean in a large barn, but they do get a chance to move around. And some of these, what are called aviary systems, they have a big warehouse, then they have a bunch of vertical structures that look like bookshelves. And the hens can fly up on those shelves and use some of the vertical space. They can move around. It's far from ideal. Far from ideal. But the alternative is that six or eight birds are in a cage about the size of your microwave. And each of those birds has less than a sheet of paper in terms of a living space for the 12 to 18 months that she's alive. It'd be like me and you and six other guys in a small elevator. We could never get out. I mean, I'd go crazy after 15, 20 minutes. Imagine spending a day or a month or a year. You know, animals never ask to be conscripted for food production. We benefit by having their products. The least we can do is treat them mercifully.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't lay any eggs in that situation.
Thank you. We would appreciate that.
By 2025 is the Kraft Heinz time frame for this. Are you concerned going forward, Wayne, that the future of the globe, the planet's needs for food are going to make your job a lot harder, because it's going to become harder and harder for growers to provide enough food for everyone on the planet? And there's going to be a breaking point at some point, isn't there?
Well, we should have never gone down this road of valuing efficiency over animal welfare. I mean, I really believe that the human mind is incredible, and we can achieve multiple objectives. We can produce safe, abundant, affordable food, but not torture animals in the process. So, you know, I'm confident that our values as a society are going to lead us in the right direction. Obviously, we've got a lot of people on the planet. I think one of the ways, frankly, that we do that is we cannot continue to eat the animal products that we do. It's just way too much. All of these animals have to have corn and soybeans and other food products. We feed 80% of corn and soybeans in the United States, not to people, but we feed it to animals who then inefficiently convert those plant foods into animal protein. That is incredibly efficient. The other issue is we waste 40% of food. We throw out 40% of the food products that are put in front of us. I mean, all of us should be really conscious of the fact that, you know, animals were raised, we use the land, we use resources, we use oil, we use water. We should not be so casual about throwing out food. You know, when I was a kid, you know, my mother and father told me to clean my plate. That's a simple ethical idea that could go a long way toward dealing with a lot of issues that we're concerned about as a society.
Wayne Pacelle is the CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. You can find him on Twitter at Wayne Pacelle. Also, the Humane Society at Humane Society, and online at humanesociety.org. Wayne, thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell today.
Thank you so much.
It's 5:27, and let's head over to the newsroom. Vic Vaughn is standing by with what's happening today in Chicago and around the world. Vic?
Good morning, Steve. It's going to be a busy start of the day for air travelers. You know, snow wasn't bad yesterday, but still hundreds of flights canceled. Those thousands of passengers, they're going to be looking to rebook this morning, but there's good news, and we have that coming up.
All right, Vic, it's 5:27.
From ABC News, Tech Trends. Parents have a new tool for teaching their kids about rewards and managing their money.
Very cute, rolled and molded plastic with Bluetooth low energy technology inside it. It shakes, it oinks, it lights up.
It's a new interactive toy and app called Wiggy. Mark Myers with Spiral Toys, the company behind Wiggy, says think of it as a digital piggy bank that works in conjunction with a real PayPal account.
We want parents and children to be able to interact together on really teaching the better half of what it means to save money.
Wiggy is centered around the concept of rewarding a child for completing tasks.
The pig will remind the kid that they have the task. When a task gets done and there's money deposited in their bank, the pig will get excited and will let you know that money has come in the bank.
In addition to assigning and tracking tasks for their children, parents can also invite friends and family to make deposits for any special occasions like birthdays and holidays. With Tech Trends, I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:38. Welcome back to the program. On the Opening Bell this morning, some aviation news. Over the weekend, U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer of New York said he was going to hold up the FAA reauthorization bill because of airline seating. He says, as a tall man, he's having a hard time fitting into seats like a lot of us because seats apparently are getting smaller and smaller. He wants to now legislate some of that. Also, this week, NASA has announced it is testing a new supersonic jet to replace the Concorde. Remember the Concorde? And there are some cool new gadgets for air travelers. All of that is on our plate this morning as we bring in Rick Seeney. He is the CEO and founder of FareCompare.com in Dallas this morning on the opening bell. Let's start with some of these gadgets, Rick. Some of them are pretty cool. What do you have?
Well, yeah, no, when you're flying nowadays, there's all sorts of very useful in travel. Some of them are actually not electronic that are actually quite useful. I'm sort of enamored with these new squeeze pods, which basically has shampoo, shaving cream, hair gel, for example, and it's sort of like a ketchup packet instead of in the plastic bottles. It's easy to carry around. You could throw it in things in places where you wouldn't be able to throw plastic bottles, so very easy to manage, and it's also under the 3-ounce rule, so it's quite useful. So check that out with squeeze pods. The other thing I notice a lot of people actually getting and carrying with them are portable luggage scales. You know, if your bag is over 50 pounds and you're actually checking those bags, it can be over $300 additional depending on which airline you're going on. So portable luggage scales. And of course, the one that I've seen almost everywhere, and I actually borrowed one of my seatmates, is having one of these USB bars where you can actually plug it in and then get 7 or 8 USB ports. So you can basically create your own charging station for either your family or the folks around in the airport that don't have that.
Do you get a sense that the people that are designing these things are designing them specifically so that they don't set off alarms at the security gates?
Absolutely, they do. Yeah, no, they're specifically for air travel. The other kind of clever thing that I found for people that like to carry wine back, especially in their checked luggage, there's a new inflatable version of something where you actually blow it up and you stick the wine bottles in, pretty much guaranteed not to break. So a pretty cool tool there. So check that out as well.
You talk to a lot of people who travel. You travel a lot. What are the gadgets out there that you'd like to see?
You know, I think one of the things that I would love to see on airplanes is sort of a consistent experience for Wi-Fi. Some Wi-Fi, they can only support email. They're not supporting things like Netflix and some of the other streaming things on there. Some of them do support TV. Some of them don't support TV. It'd be great if when you hopped on a plane, you didn't have to go through a bunch of rigmarole to get Wi-Fi going. I think that's one of the things that, and, you know, even now American Airlines is trying to get out of their contract with Gogo by saying that the satellite-based system is not fast enough.
There was news over the weekend. The last time we talked here on the opening bell with you, we talked about the fat seats from Airbus, these benches basically that they'd gotten a patent for. Well, over the weekend, Charles Schumer, Senator Schumer from New York, he says that he's going to hold up the FAA reauthorization bill with some new language that might require airlines to provide bigger seats because he says he can't fit in them because he's so tall.
I agree with him. I think that, well, at least from a height standpoint, if you're over 5'8" or so, your head doesn't even actually hit the headrest. It's sort of odd that they do them this way. Now, I think a lot of issues also are with sort of the width of the seat. You know, our derrieres aren't getting any smaller here in the United States.
I think they're making them thinner because it's, you know, I'm not getting any heavier.
Yeah, no, the whole job of an airline is to squeeze as much money per square inch out of an aircraft as they can. Some airlines, like Spirit Airlines, have ridiculously narrow seats on them. You have to know that ahead of time if you're going on them. Other ones have different ones. I've seen this kind of stuff where they try to legislate what an airline can have inside their cabin. I don't know if it's going to go very far with these things, but certainly we've seen, for instance, we talked a little bit about bench seats that Airbus actually was putting out for people to make it easier for people that are larger in seats. I think each airline is a little bit different on their philosophy with seats. Some of them are trying to use some of the newer technology so that it actually is a little bit skinnier, but you actually get more room because the armrest is actually skinnier. So, you know, having more knee room, having the width and the height, it's sort of crazy. I think most airplanes were developed for people in the 1950s and 1940s when the average height was 5'7".
Schumer has tried this before, and I think just earlier in February it failed once. This time, though, he's put in there some issues about possible safety issues. that if you if you're cramming too many people on these planes, it might be a safety issue for when you have to evacuate.
Yeah, there's also some language in there about how many lavatories you should have per the number of people on aircraft. Airlines have gotten very fast and loose, at least some of them, with how many lavatories they put in. So in essence, we don't have a passenger bill of rights in the United States. Now, they tried to pass one in New York. A part of that was with Schumer was involved with that. They do have one in Europe, but slowly the Department of Transportation and the FAA have been slowly in adding some of these passenger bill of rights items. For example, the three-hour tarmac rule for domestic flights and four-hour for international, where the plane has to head back, can't sit on the tarmac. We've also seen some changes where you actually get a 24-hour grace period or a hold period whenever you buy your tickets. So it's not above them to start making some rulemaking. Typically, it's not going to be through legislation in the authorization bill. It'll be through the DOT just mandating it.
I hope you saw this. NASA says it is starting work on a new supersonic passenger plane. Did you see that?
I did. I want to sign up for those. A little expensive, to be honest. But we did. You know, we had the old supersonic jets in the 70s and 80s out there. They're no longer out there, where you could fly from New York to London in an hour and a half or two. I hope they do this. The issue with those planes in the past has been breaking the sound barrier, and when that happens, and noise issues.
And the selling point of this new aircraft apparently is that it's quiet. It doesn't do that for some.
Yeah, exactly. So they're trying to figure out that problem, which is the noise issue. Planes in general have gotten quieter. Engines have gotten quieter. We're going to see biodiesel fuels in some of these aircraft soon. They've been testing that for over a decade now. So airlines, it's all about fuel. Right now it's great because oil's at $30 a barrel. But when oil's at $100, $110 a barrel, it's all about the fuel cost.
Any good flights out of Chicago?
Yeah, there's tons of stuff. I was looking at mid-April for flights out of Chicago. You know, you have in the Northwest, Vancouver, Seattle, Portland, all there. Portland at $200 round trip, Vancouver at $310. Those are both great prices. Seattle at $230. I also noticed that, you know, Southern Florida, Miami, also in Midwest Florida and Orlando, the prices are under $160 round trip. And Los Angeles and San Diego, under $210 round trip right now for mid-April.
That's Rick Cini, the president and CEO of FairCompare.com, with us this morning on the Opening Bell from Dallas. We have some breaking news just before we check traffic. The Wall Street Journal and Fortune Magazine now both reporting the Sports Authority has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy this morning in court. And the company, which operates about 450 stores across the country, could shut down later this week unless it finds a buyer, according to the filing. Again, Sports Authority has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Now, a traffic sponsored by Blaine's Farm and Fleet. And here's Adam Chappelle.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 550 on the Dow futures this morning. Dow futures lower 32. The S&P is off 4. The S&P futures off 4. Most of the world markets are in positive territory this morning. Let's find out more about commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. As we started the month of March, the U.S. Department of Agriculture issued crop ratings showing the condition of the wheat crop very good for this time of year. 68% of Oklahoma's winter wheat crop rated good to excellent at the end of February, and crop conditions in the number one wheat state, Kansas, also showing good crop ratings for this time of the year. So that, along with a strong dollar and bigger than expected wheat stocks, pushed wheat down to multi-year lows yesterday. Turning to livestock, the cattle market yesterday maintained some strength, with the nearby April live cattle contract gaining 17 cents and June gaining 25 cents a hundredweight in yesterday's trade. Even the nearby hog contract, April hogs gained 40 cents for the day yesterday. Back to that cattle market, traders optimistic that maybe we'll get some higher live cattle prices in the Plains States this week. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. On the opening bell now, here's an idea. How about if you just turn off your phone and your email before you go to bed? You might get a better night's sleep. One company in Europe has this decided it's going to start turning off email for employees so that they come to work rested. Writing about this on Quartz is
the reporter, his reporter, Oliver Staley, on Twitter at @OStaley. Good morning, Oliver. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Did you turn off your email before you went to bed last night?
You know, I didn't, and my company doesn't do it for me, but apparently one company's at least doing that for its employees.
So what are they thinking?
Well, the idea here is that increasingly management experts are coming to the realization that sleep is an important part of its employees' sort of overall health, and employees aren't getting enough of it. So one company has decided to sort of take the proactive step, and this is an extreme measure, but is dismantling all employees' emails overnight. I think they turn it off at 6 and don't turn it on until 6 or 7 the next morning. Not all companies, obviously, are going to do that, but it sends a pretty strong message to its employees that they value their employees' sleep and want them to make sure that they're not just sleeping but unplugging from work.
Yeah, and the question is this, first of all, is there science to sort of back this up? And the second thing is, you know, okay, the email's off, but the screen is still there and you can do other stuff, right?
Sure. I think what they're doing is basically they want their employees to disengage. They don't want them working on work projects until, you know, 11 or 12 at night because the productivity falls and they make mistakes. And there is science behind that. There's research that shows that people who get up at 6, like your listeners, who are getting up earlier, I suspect, and working until 11 or midnight, basically, you at that late night, you have the cognitive function of someone who's drunk. You know, it's the equivalent of having a couple of glasses of wine or beers that late. So, yeah, work productivity falls, decision-making falls, judgment falls, the less sleep you get. So there's a real business interest in making sure your employees are rested.
This seems to be a trend that's developing. Goldman Sachs, as you write in your article last summer, told interns they couldn't work more than 17 hours because some of these young kids who were working there were working just really long schedules. I think a couple of them even died, maybe in accidents or something. Do you think this is going to catch on, or is it going to take a while?
Well, you know, I think it's different companies are going to have a different approach. And as you mentioned, those Wall Street firms, which are notorious for these punishing hours, are realizing that not all their employees are capable physically or mentally of handling that kind of stress. And yes, there was a number of young people committed suicide or died from one of them had a seizure. Others had drug-related fatalities, and that was at least attributed in part to not getting enough sleep. One of the things that so my reporting was based on a report from McKinsey, the management consultancy. They realized that young people are actually going to make decisions about where they work based on the quality of life. And so so while not all companies will do this, the ones that are interested in hiring young people may realize that if they want to get talented people, they're going to have to offer them a lifestyle that those young people are going to want.
And we have about a minute left, but I want to, you know, on the flip side of this is, will employees be judged differently if they're not being able to put in the time to do the quality of work they think that their employer demands of them?
Well, and that's a really good question, because in a lot of companies, they could sort of send these outward signals that they value their company's rest, and yet managers may expect, you know, you to deliver that report on Monday, regardless of how much sleep it costs you. So I think for companies like the European car maker that does turn off its emails, you have to sort of set practices that are hard and don't deviate from them. And then managers have to follow it. So, you know, managers have to set the tone. And if they're turning off their emails and they're not responding late at night, then that tells their employees that it's okay to shut down as well.
Oliver Staley is a reporter at Quartz covering management and business education. You can find him on Twitter at @OStaley. And his story is on Quartz at QZ.com. Oliver, thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great day. It's 5:56 now. That's the show today. Our executive producer is Mary Sandberg. Ben Cortez is our engineer. Ross Cochran and Kevin Powell here with production help. The Steve Cochran Show is coming up next. We'll have more on all of these business stories, plus much, much more still ahead this morning. And we'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock for the Opening Bell. It's 5:57.